Morning.
Class.
We'd like to welcome everybody to the study session for Thursday, August 20th, 2009.
Oh,
and boy, aren't we excited. No, we've had a great break. Enjoyed. I hope everyone enjoyed their summer vacation. We're not going to get reports from them. But good to be back with everyone. So we'll start with the first item on the agenda, which is to review the items on the agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Councilmember Summers.
Item 5D, can I get some specifics on what 5D, which is the supply contract for library books, which is fine, but the music CDs, videos, DVDs, what is that? Does that entail?
I see Heather coming up.
Not the latest Rocky movie or anything, I would hope. I was hoping there wasn't more than one, but apparently.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, when it comes to music CDs, we actually do not purchase them, except for like sound effects DVDs, for people who are doing things that they need sound effects, or children's music, for the most part. We used to have a collection of jazz, classical music, that sort of thing, but we have not purchased in that area for a while because of our budget reductions. I'm sorry. What we have is what we have. Now, when it comes to DVDs, where am I? Okay.
You sound good.
With the DVDs, what we purchase are things recommended by the American Film Institute or that are book related. So we're not going to have Chucky's movies or those sorts of movies.
Are they available elsewhere? Or is the library pretty much the sole source for these things? You could download every TV program on Hulu now. I'm just curious as to whether we would be better off focusing on books and other educational materials other than...
They are a minor part of what we do purchase, but they are a very popular part. In fact, the AV collection, which includes DVDs, CDs, the audio books, etc., are a very big generator of circulation. So we're not going to have 15 copies of an Academy Award winner. And we try to focus, like I said, on the classical things recommended by the American Film Institute. So we're going to have trying to think of what we might have. A lot of
you
the Alfred Hitchcock
connection
movies.
With your books. For example, you may have the book To Kill a Mockingbird. You may also have the
Correct. The
movie. And so there's a connection between the regular materials you have and the... it's an extension of your regular collection, in other words.
Or it's considered classical.
Right.
Something that all Americans should be aware of. So, for example, the Alfred Hitchcock movies, we're going to carry those. And you're not going to find those as much at the Blockbuster stores because... they're trying to focus on what's really popular and current right now, and we're not going to have the latest release.
And those
wouldn't be available online
on some of the new media?
Yes, people can use Netflix and those sorts of things if they wish to do that, certainly.
Well, I was just thinking, more Netflix, I was thinking some of the online, the Hulus, and the where you get to sit in front of a computer and watch it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
if it's available, why are we buying it?
Got to have a computer.
That's friendly for the whole family.
We have a computer.
Why would we
could buy more computers for the library? I'll trade.
Again, Mayor and Council, what drives us a lot is the usage. And one of the things we try to do is try to match up the demand that comes from the community. And so over the for the last several years, the AV materials have really been the most popular for us. And again, we don't necessarily see us competing with the Blockbusters and the others. But
we're
it is
have
a,
three copies of something.
Right. So, it's a little more of what you expect to find in a public library type things, and they are very popular for checking out.
So, what you're saying is that you are responding to the demand of your customer base or
Correct.
The citizen base, rather than defining and creating that demand. You're responding to that demand.
Correct.
Novel concept. Okay, anything else?
All right.
Oh, Vice Mayor?
I'll just add, more importantly, what Heather said at the beginning is we've reduced greatly what we do anyway. My goodness, we got to get used to these microphones again. They need to be adjusted. But overall, because of budget reductions, what we have purchased both in audio and in print has been greatly reduced.
Correct. Yeah, I would say our DVD budget is probably 2% of our overall budget. It's a very minor part.
Well, and I appreciate the fact that we give you a budget and ask you to provide a certain level of service and then leave it up to you to just, you know, use your professional judgment and feedback you get from our citizens as to what they want in their library. So I appreciate the fact that you're working within a very limited level of resources to meet as best you can those demands. So thank you very much for your efforts.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on page 4? Page 5, Councilmember Higgins.
I have a question about on 5H, as in Henry.
Term contract for police vehicle maintenance and repair services for the police department.
The question on your matrix of points scored to the different, you know, you've divided up in three groups, and when I like read, you know, your Burge Ford came out like the highest score for, what does it say? Business reputation, stability experience, mechanics experience, certification, all that type of stuff, which I would think would be even more important than, you know, the layout of the shop, that type of thing. But what I don't know in specifically is like the proposal price. It's just a number. How far away from them were they? Because I, yeah, go right ahead.
Good morning, Mayor and Council Member. Five Star Ford, which is the primary contractor, has had this work for a number of years. The majority of the vehicles that we're talking about are Ford Crown Victorias, and they're, a lot of them are still natural gas-powered vehicles. So one of the criteria is the dealership has to be able to do warranty repairs on natural gas-powered vehicles, and there are very few dealers that Ford Motor Company has in the Valley that can do that. Five Star Ford being actually at one time one of the only ones that could do it. Hence, this is another contract based upon the one preceding it. About three quarters of the vehicles in the fleet are based in the West. And Five Star Ford picks these vehicles up, takes them and does the repairs and brings them back to us. Burge Ford, which is a local dealer, this is the first time that they've bid with us. And they'll actually be doing about 25% of the fleet. The fleet is based in the East. They're also certified to do natural gas repairs and for those vehicles. So the list of potential candidates was reduced because of the criteria to be able to work on this alternative powered vehicle.
Do you want to talk about the difference in the price and the cost for maintenance?
The cost for maintenance is kind of complex. We had some responses, especially the one from Burge. The Burge response had, it was two-tiered. There was a cost for doing conventionally powered vehicles, and then there was an $80 an hour cost for doing natural gas. The cost at Five Star Ford was $47.50, which is actually a tremendous price, and it's a reduction over the existing contract that we had with them. Last year, they were at $52 an hour, so they're actually rolling their price back.
So the difference in experience that you judged might make up for, be made up for by the significant cost reduction?
Correct. Okay. Right. The actual core group of Ford trained technicians with natural gas experience is truly existing at Five Star Ford.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
The Mayor and Council, what Pete's been able to do, though, by really trying to find an opportunity to get a local group in here, even though it may be at a premium cost, we do see the opportunity because of their proximity to get, you said the eastern part of the fleet to be able to go into Burge Ford. So we are trying to find a way to bring them into the contract, which I don't think they've been in recently.
They have not.
Yeah,
right.
So we are trying to find an opportunity.
Yeah, and I've gotten some recent feedback, and even from someone at Burge, they really appreciated the efforts that the city has to reach out and to include local businesses and to get them bidding where they have not been bidding.
Right.
And they recognize the city's efforts. So thank you for that outreach, because I think it's you know, it's important and something that we've pledged to do. And I'm getting some good feedback that people are recognizing those efforts. They go beyond the seminars and the other good things that we're doing, that we're actually seeing some results, and this is an indication of that. So hopefully it'll be the start of a trend. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on page 5? Page 6. Page 7. Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you. Had some concerns on 5-0, and I was wondering if there was any additional information right now about the funding process and what's going on there.
Mayor and Council, let me try to address this. This is somewhat of a unique funding opportunity. The city has a specific capital improvement program for the arts and cultural facilities. That fund, there is a fund that is specifically set up to fund that arts and cultural program. It is restricted for the purpose only of arts and cultural facilities, and only for the expansion of those facilities. It is not available for the maintenance or repair of any existing facilities today. The reason it is only allowed to be used for expansion is because those funds that are coming in from impact fees. And by required by state law, they can only be used for expansion and are restricted for cultural arts facilities, as well as there has been a requirement also of the city to have those dollars spent within a specific period of time. There has been some, you know, comments about sometimes we have accumulated significant amounts of dollars and have not spent them. And then also, and Johan can talk a little bit more about the specific programs of the support, but that what we're doing here is expanding the facility in a way that will allow us to generate more revenues for the Arts and Cultural Department, because we'll be expanding the capacity, for more classroom size. And Johan, anything you want to share with us about maybe the demand that you're seeing in that area?
Sure. Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, a wise man once said, responding to the needs of your clients is a novel idea.
A wise man or a smart man? You know?
I just can't remember who that was. Our glassblowing studio is one of our most popular studios and very active. We have two areas of the glassblowing classes: an internal, which is for small glass products like bead making and so on, and then the external, which is the more traditional glass blowing as such. We are actually equipped to have two teachers going at the same time in the courtyard. We have the number of kilns, the number of equipment outside to have two instructors going at the same time, but the space only allows for one, that we've discovered to our own sort of detriment. The space is very limited. We don't use one set of equipment. It's literally in one corner and unused. The problem really is with the technique. Involves an 8-foot long metal tube with a piece of melted glass on the one end, and walking around with that requires a lot of space, and it's very, very unsafe if you have too many students around, standing around, watching and being taught. So literally moving the northern wall 14 foot, which is all we're doing, we double the size almost, and certainly will double the capacity in terms of, we can now use all the equipment that's already there, the teachers will be able to teach more students, and we will be able to, by putting a canopy over, use it for more months of the year, because it's outdoors, so it's more usable. So we're expanding capacity by simply moving a wall and putting a canopy over. No other O&M increases at all, no extra other costs.
Mayor, if I could, a couple follow-up on. For city manager, did I hear you correctly, then some of the urgency is a requirement to not sit on this money, but it's generated by the city itself. We just have said, hey, we don't want to sit on this money. There's no outside force driving us to...
No, they're actually, you know, think about, we are, you know, we've got existing lawsuits in place today that are even challenging the thought that we can do this, and the fact that we don't, you know, even a suggestion that we don't have a plan for spending these dollars, which we do, by the way, and I think that that's been validated by the court's decisions, but we do actually have a capital improvement program for arts and cultural facilities with the idea that we are going to spend those dollars to expand services. And so the question becomes, though, if you collect those dollars, and I think there's a legitimate concern, if you collect the dollars and hold on to them for an extended period of years and don't spend it, then the question is, well, if your city has been growing and this development has paid for those, you know, paid the impact fees, why haven't you added new facilities and done that? And now this is just one project. We have others that we are looking at down the road in order to meet the continuing needs in this area. Now, some projects, granted, what made this project work well to be funded now is the size of the project related to the dollars that we've collected. There are other projects that we see into the future that we're going to have to anticipate, you know, additional dollars to be collected before we can actually complete them. But we did have, I think it was at one point, a 10-year period of time. Does that sound right, Brian? Where that if we didn't spend the dollars, then we had to return them? Yeah, reimburse them. So we and this is kind of in that vein. Now, I think we've modified and amended that requirement, but we also committed that we were going to be diligent about when we collected them, that we were going to have a plan and that we would begin making those improvements in a reasonable period of time.
And as a follow-up for Ms. Spinner, what's the next step in this litigation that we may be exposed to as far as?
Well, we were successful in the trial court level, and they are still in this period. They have still have an opportunity to file an appeal with the Arizona Court of Appeals. That has not yet been filed, but they're still in the time period in which they can. I did talk to the outside counsel in the last few days to get assurance from them that even if the city was not successful, we would not have to repay this amount. The lawsuit is for a going forward basis. So this project or the money spent on this project.
The lawsuit was challenging the city's ability to collect this type of impact.
Right. Yeah, the council's legal authority or the city's authority.
And the courts upheld the city's authority to do that.
Correct. Yes.
So and as of right now, we've been the courts have affirmed the city's program.
And there's a specific formula, Mayor, that has to be developed and studied to determine the amount that can
collect. Yeah, I mean, we haven't gone through the impact fees with this council, but the fact is that impact fees are it's very well defined.
Yes.
How we can impose them, how much we can impose, and it's not just willy-nilly. It's very well defined by law as to what we can do.
Well, Mayor, if I'd like to have this taken off the consent agenda, but this will give me some opportunity. I have a lot more questions. I don't want to tie it up here in public.
That's okay.
So good. Thank you.
So item 5-0 will be removed from the consent. And one thing just to summarize, as I understand it, Mr. Brady, since these are impact fees, these are not paid from general tax revenues. They're paid from specific impact fees, which are by law restricted. So we're not making a choice here to spend it here versus on a fire station.
Correct.
Or something. That choice is not left to us.
They're not part of
Once this impact fee is collected specifically for arts and culture, it has to be used for this and for nothing else.
That is correct.
We can't cross-utilize this. We can't say, well, we're not going to do this. We're going to go add to a police station or do something like that. Can't do that.
That's right.
Law doesn't allow that.
It's restricted to this, and I think Johan has made a wise choice because he's found something that can expand and then actually bring more revenue to the Arts Center.
So in deciding where to spend this, we've, as you've said, Johan has chosen a thing that can actually be an investment that hopefully will increased capacity, which will bring in more revenue, which leads toward our goal of certainly at the Arts Center of making it more self-sufficient,
right,
and more revenue without an increase in, as you said, if I heard you correctly, no increase in O&M.
No increase.
That it actually will add to the bottom line and hopefully lead us toward our overall goal to make the Arts Center more self-sufficient. Is that a summary of what
yep.
you've heard?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, Councilmember Fenter.
And I appreciate all that you're saying and wanted staff to know you know, from the support for marquee signs or everything, that there isn't any, you know, question. In fact, I've been so happy to see how things have been run more like, you know, as a business and looking to get to your break even or profit point. So I just had a little concerns of public perception on
sure. Sure. Good question.
All right. So 5-0 will be removed from the consent agenda. Anything else on page 7? Page 8. Page 9. Page 10. And page 11. Councilmember Higgins?
Item 7D. I still have a question that I'm not really clear of. I brought up in the subcommittee on this, and that is on page 3 of the report, bullet 3. It says, if required to vacate, alternative housing is the responsibility of the owner slash tenant. I still have an issue with the fact that we're putting the financial responsibility on the tenant to pay for an alternative housing, even though where they're renting is subhuman.
Mayor, council members. At first, we thought we were going to have some money from Neighborhood Services. It appears that we will not have any money. It's not a fundable thing to try to help with them. So the object is, on a rare, rare occasion, would we find a situation so bad that they needed to be vacated? But on that occasion, then we're left with the decision, do we leave them in an unsafe condition, or do we tell them that they need to vacate? Now, we are putting together a packet that will include all the social service agencies that can help them, as well as the list of all of the temporary housing shelters, things like that. And then we're also going to put some calls into some local churches and see if we can put them on the list and see if they would be available to also assist. Most cases, they will have family or friends that they can go to. On the rare occasion they can't, then hopefully the list of people who can assist them will be available for them.
So how is the owner of the property held accountable for relocating these folks? Are we putting anything on them?
Well, you have a rental agreement between the owner and the tenant. There is a general standard that the owner provide a habitable place where they can live. A place that's not going to fall down. And I, Ms. Spinner, why don't you
yes,
attorney on this?
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, this in no way prohibits or prevents the tenant from seeking civil remedies from the landlord. So
under the contract they have, which is the rental agreement.
That's right. So they can still go after the landlord. That, though, is between the tenant and the landlord, and the city would not be a party to that litigation.
See, this the concern I have with this, okay, someone is living in a rental unit that is subpar. So we're already reaching a demographic that doesn't have maybe that experience of going after getting a lawyer and suing a tenant or owner of a building. I just, you know, I'm concerned with, because when you go through the ordinance, I mean, we're talking about truly unsafe conditions that someone may be living in. And then we're telling those people that, oh, and by the way, you know, you can move into a shelter. I mean, I just think that we're setting up the possibility where no one is really going to complain because they know we're kicking it. You know, they're going to be out on the street, and where are they going to live? So I know that you're saying it's a civil thing with a tenant owner. I just don't know how someone is going to be protected.
Unless there's an actual situation, I have trouble thinking of every hypothetical. But
sure.
I have had calls in the past where a citizen has a question about either a business they're dealing with or a landlord that they're involved with, and they ask the city attorney's office, can we become involved in that? Well, we don't have the ability to represent individual citizens. But what I do on a regular basis is refer them to the state bar, who has a list of attorneys who are willing to work on a pro bono basis, or the state bar provides legal services to individuals who may not be able to afford attorneys. So we do refer them to services that may be available, much like the neighborhood refers them to services.
As Ms. Albright said, you know, hopefully this situation is very, very, very extremely rare. And it would seem like we could have, as part of our process, if we do ever have this, some sort of program sheet, whatever, where we specifically provide that kind of information on a more formalized basis.
Right, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, that it be part of it so that the tenant is very much aware of all the resources that they have.
We could certainly add the state bar information to the information that they're going to hand out.
So my question is, why couldn't we add something to this ordinance that says if you have to move out, you, the owner of the building, are responsible for paying for them? Why can't that be a part of this? And or if we put someone up somewhere, reimbursed by the owner of the building? I mean, I don't, you know, I'm concerned with that person who's living in these conditions, really, you know, at a wit's end of what do we call or not, because we're going to have to find somewhere to live, and it doesn't seem like a good situation.
I'm not sure we can involve ourselves in that process because we are not the decision maker. That is a state law that talks about habitability of a living residence. So the landowner has a legal obligation under Arizona law to provide habitable residence.
Does state law include some remedy, limitations on remedies?
It requires it and it provides a remedy. The remedy is that the resident sue the landowner and claims that their property is not habitable. If the resident himself, whether they call the city or not, they feel that the premises that they're living in is not habitable, doesn't have safe environment, they can move out themselves, but then to obtain the remedy, they have to sue under state law that the landowner did not provide a safe residence for them. So this is the same process, although we are helping the resident reach that point that it is not a safe residence.
I think Councilmember Richens had a question.
I really share the same concerns as Councilmember Higgins, and I really wrestled through it as I watched it. But for the practical purposes of this program, the conclusion I came to, excuse me, is we can't be in a position as a city deciding who caused the damage that made it unhabitable. There are instances where the tenant might be causing that damage. There's instances that the landlord may, you know, there's a lot of sticky situations there. So if this program's not going to get caught up in that kind of thing, we're going to have to try to avoid those situations. And I think this is the best compromise. But I appreciate the mayor suggesting that we give a full palette of legal resources to that tenant when they have to move out so they have some kind of recourse. If they're living in substandard units.
And Mayor and Council, I mean, I'll say this, and not that it'll be a formal part of the program, but if we get to a point where we have families that literally have no other place to go and we can't work something out with the social services, we're not going to do that to them. We'll find a voucher to put them up for 24 hours or something like that. But I don't necessarily think we need to make that a formal part of the program. We are going to treat them humanely in the sense where if they have no other option, we can't get, and we've got a great social services network in Mesa that we will go to and talk to about this. But I think if it's in that kind of real short period of time, I think we can take care of them. The real question is beyond that and what recourse they have, I think we can provide the resources. Well, so they
and
can
I think
that.
We also have to remember, number one, as Tammy said, this is hopefully a very infrequent, rare occurrence. Second thing is, as we talked about last time we went over this, it's not going to be where an inspector shows up at 2 o'clock and the family's moving out at 3 o'clock. I mean, I would assume that if we have a situation that's this dire, there is some conversations that go on between supervisors, probably landowner. You know, there's some conversations and discussions that are going on, so we understand what the situation is, and we can adapt to it. We can plan for it. We can put some pressure on the landlord to remedy the situation before we have to start asking people to leave because the place is uninhabitable. And then the other thing is we also have the luxury of being able to see how this works. Mm-hmm. And if it becomes a real problem, I think that we can revisit it. If it's not a problem, then
we would return, obviously.
Then it's not a problem. Does that sound okay, Councilmember Richens?
Yeah, no.
Councilmember Higgins?
Sure.
I think you have a valid point because it seems like we're letting the landlord off the hook.
Yeah.
In most cases, and I agree with Councilmember Richens, that we don't know, but let's face it, most of the time it's the landlord that is falling down. But there could be that situation where it's not. And I think that's a valid point. Yeah, Councilmember Higgins and the
Vice
Mayor.
Just to tack something onto that, just so people understand, you know, these are big issues like lack of hot heating and cooling, lack of running water, you know, no bathrooms, no kitchen.
These are pretty drastic situations.
Yeah, we're not talking holes in the wall or, a fan that's not working. So just so you know, those playing at home realize we're not talking about just minor. These are major.
Right. And in most cases, we can work with the tenant or the owner to isolate that hazard so that it does not affect the rest of the home and so that they would be able to maintain their presence there. Obviously, that would be our last resort, is to ask them that it's so bad they have to leave.
Great. Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
Well, the whole reason this evolved was when we had situations where people are stuck in a lease that they can't get out of. They're stuck there. They're in a situation that's really inappropriate, but they're legally bound, and this is a way for, if it is uninhabitable, they are able to get out, and the owner of the property is responsible to make sure his property is habitable. And if it isn't, it's a way for those people to get out of those leases, too.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. All right. If there's nothing else on page 11, we'll go on to the next item. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees.
Read them all.
We have the minutes from the Transportation Advisory Board, the Parks and Recreation Board, the Economic Development Advisory Board, and the Public Safety Committee.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Kavanaugh, second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Next item is to hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Yeah. Councilmember Higgins.
Just because I attended it yesterday morning, the Arts and Business Council's annual breakfast fundraiser, where our very own Mesa, the Boeing Company, was the diamond sponsor of this year's event. It was awesome, of course. And I just wanted to shout out to the Boeing Company for their great support of the Arts and Business Council.
And also, we had another Mesa base that was a candidate for the top award, Target, for their efforts in Mesa as far as their three for free, the first Sunday program, and their support for arts in around the valley, but specifically in Mesa too. Okay, Councilmember Summers.
We had quite a bit going on. We'll just boil it down to the one thing. Mayor and I attended the groundbreaking Fire Station 215, the new station. That'll be our second fire station under construction, and hopefully in January we'll break ground on 219.
Good. Okay. Councilmember Richens? Nothing? Yeah, I had the opportunity of, along with Councilmember Richens and Councilmember Higgins, of attending the CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations. Yeah, I always forget the acronym. On Saturday here in Mesa, it was a valley-wide event where leaders that represent the various organizations related to Muslims around the valley were there. It was a very good event, and I had the opportunity of speaking at that. So that was good. Vice Mayor.
Well, it's been a while since we met officially in council meetings, but there's a whole bunch of things. We've mentioned a few, and we could spend quite a bit of time if we went through everything that we actually did on our break as far as meetings go. You had the Islamic attended in your behalf, the Pakistani group for the valley. There's a number of things, but the major thing that I did during the break was I attended Sister Cities International Conference, where our Mesa Sister Cities received an award for work that they've done down in Caraz, Peru, their medical missions, and it was very nice to be there with Dr. Osorio, who heads that up, and be recognized. We had a nice trip. It was enjoyable, and seeing a lot of folks who get very involved in Sister Cities. And along that lines, I want to mention that come September 11th, part of the opening at the MAC, where they have all the different groups, and that's going to be promoted a lot, I hope, of getting people out for opening the new season at the MAC. One of those concerts will be the September 11th concert for Mesa Sister Cities, which will be in the Aikida Theater on September 11th, and encourage everybody to come out to a free concert. Everything in the MAC that weekend will be free to come and get a taste of what there is. So invite everybody out on September 11th to Mesa Sister City September 11th concert.
Thank you. I'd just like to say one more thing. I had the opportunity of attending a forum up in near Williams that Councilmember Richens was one of the leaders of, called the Straw Bale Forum, where we had several leaders throughout the state get together and talk about transportation, water, and growth, and land reform. And, for example, Director of the Land Department, Maria Breyer, was there, and Attorney General Terry Goddard, and several legislators and other things were up there, and Councilmember Richens was, that was basically your program for the most part. So thank you very much for that invite and for putting that on. Okay. Mr. Brady.
Yes, here we go. We're back into session, and so we will have our first council meeting back on this coming Monday, August 24th. And then we'll be having a study session on the 27th, which will be followed by a Community and Neighborhood Services Committee meeting. Also, just a reminder that the Thursday, September 3rd study session is canceled due to several members of council attending the Arizona League Conference. So just want to make sure you're aware of that. Also, there's been a lot going on with the city staff, different programs and recognitions over the last 6 weeks. Let me first acknowledge that for the 14th annual Achievement in Excellence, the city is one of only 59 cities in the United States that has been awarded the Excellence in Procurement Award. We're one of 15 government agencies in Arizona, and we've received this award for the five consecutive years. So that's quite an achievement for Jim Ruiz and Ed Quedens and that group. We want to congratulate them. Also, the police department received the International Association of Chief of Police Excellence and Police Aviation Award. And that was a program that showed excellence in airborne law enforcement. So we want to congratulate them. They will be actually recognized at a national conference of police chiefs coming up here pretty quickly. I think many of you might have seen, but we want to remind you that in the national publication of Golf Digest, the city's Dobson Ranch golf course was named Arizona's best municipal course. So that's quite a recognition. And if you look on that list, not only in addition to being one of the best in Arizona, it was probably one of the cheapest to play in the entire country. It was a lot cheaper than Torrey Pines, though. Also, during the last 6 weeks, as a result of many of our efforts with the Kaboom initiative, Mace was recognized as Playful City USA, received that recognition. So it's quite quite an achievement. And then yesterday, we have three opportunities during the year to meet with our several of our, about 150 or so of our managers throughout the city, and we recognize different exceptional customer services that have been provided by our employees. There was one yesterday that I think the council may be interested in knowing about. As you know, during this past summer, as we opened up our pools, we were very concerned or very aware of the issues that had happened in prior year with the Cryptosporidium and making sure that we kept our pools healthy. And part of doing that is making sure everyone who attends the pool is wearing the appropriate swim attire. And as you can imagine, there are some areas in our community where having a swimsuit, per se, is not necessarily something that may be afforded. But we found out that in the summer, as we were beginning opening up the pools, this became quite a challenge for some of our residents. And so not only recognizing that this was going to create some distress for some of our younger citizens that would not be able to come to the pool, Amy Manis and the Parks and Recreation staff took it upon herself to go out and work with many of our local businesses and was able to get 200 swimsuits donated this summer so that we did not deny anybody the opportunity to come and swim at Mesa Pools this year. So we recognized her yesterday, and I thought I'd share that with you today.
That's all. Thank you for doing that. Awesome. And you had me scared there for a second when you talked about a national publication and you started to lift it. I thought it was the New Yorker magazine.
Oh.
So thank you for making it Golf Digest. And thank you for letting us know about the great things, and especially that last one, which we, you know, all too often we don't ever get a chance to hear about the great things that are going on, not only in the city, but with our city staff, and we appreciate that. Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak for the public?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. That being said, I'll entertain a motion into executive session.
Going to executive session.
Have a motion from Vice Mayor and a second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We're now moving into executive session. Thank you.